and online at democracynow.org. Mark Bray is the author of a book that is coming out in the next few weeks called Antifa, the Anti-Fascist Handbook. He is a lecturer at Dartmouth College. That does it for our broadcast. If you want to sign up for our daily digest, our news headlines every day, you can text the word Democracy Now! Without a space to 66866. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks so much for joining us. You have to just correct.
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
What's good? This is Tevin, your host here at Combined Culture Radio.
Hey, what's up? I'm Jalen Super Ultra Extra, your co-host. And here at Combined Culture, we're here to touch on multiple aspects of the culture.
Our first show is Wednesday, August 16th at 7 p.m. Tune in to spread the culture.
Have you seen KBOO's Fuzzy Boo Van? It's a giant furry blue Muppet mobile that brings music and joy wherever it's found in Portland and across the region. We're having a contest this summer. If you spot the van, post a picture on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter with the hashtag FuzzyBoo and you'll be entered to win a chance to have FuzzyBoo at your event, as well as other prizes. Each picture you take is another chance to win. For more info and clues on where to find the van, go to kboo.fm/fuzzyboo.
It is a little past 5 o'clock, and coming up next, we have KBOO Evening News. This program has been made possible by KBOO members and support from Portland's Gay Directory, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New smartphone app available for all iPhones and Droids. For more information, you can visit gaypdx.com.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Portland will be having a rally against transgender employment discrimination tomorrow.
Governor Kate Brown signed a bill today designed to combat corporate secrecy and fraudulent business practices.
Iranian President Hassan Rouhani stated this week that Iran could abandon a nuclear deal if the United States imposes any new sanctions against them.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, August 16th, 2017. I'm Brian Pritchett.
And I'm Aaron J. Bernard. Governor Kate Brown signed a bill today designed to combat corporate secrecy and fraudulent business practices. House Bill 2191, a piece of legislation designed specifically for shell companies, would require a physical street address on incorporation filings and subject directors and officers of these anonymous corporations to claims for damages. The website Investopedia.com defines shell corporations as having no active business operations or significant assets. While this isn't technically illegal, the uses for them often include tax evasion, money laundering, and hiding illicit activity, in addition to a host of gray market activities like loophole exploitation and offshore banking. Oregon has seen more than its fair share of these entities, like a rundown unoccupied house in Aloha back in 2015 that was at one point host to over 1,300 companies, making it a local equivalent to the Cayman Islands. But with the new legislation officially on its way, Governor Brown has taken a good first step to keeping business honest.
Next, we hear KBOO's Zion Bro with a new commentary called Rose from the Concrete.
Society set the stage. Bet to the system you're a slave. Truth is, we don't know the system because they put the truth in the grave. Bet truth is, you better know your script because it's showtime, we on stage. Yup, truth is, step out of line, the director put you in your place. Bang.
Hello, PDX. This is Zion Bro. Today we're going to be talking about a topic that's not usually on the table for discussion. the internal flaws of the American dream. In a nutshell, that is, of course, because this is Rose from the Concrete on KBOO Radio. What is the Federal Reserve, and why should you care? First of all, the name Federal Reserve was chosen very calculatedly. The name Federal Reserve is entirely misleading. Here's why. Because the name suggests federal, but the Federal Reserve is by no means federal. The Federal Reserve is a private corporation. Some know it as a central bank. The familiar know it as a banking cartel. Just like any banking cartel around the world, it's owned by the central banking families of the world. These names might sound familiar. Rothschilds, JP Morgan, Rockefellers, all culprits of the central banking cartel, who is very experienced with, who is notorious for using interest as rent to own. Since way back, they've been doing this same technique. Exposing money to a country that is lacking it and charging super high interest rates so that that country will never possess the means to pay them back. This is important to know because the cash flow of the country is printed by the Federal Reserve, and by no means is the Federal Reserve regulated by the federal government. This may sound out of whack, but just tap into this a little bit. The Federal Reserve fulfills its public duty as a separate entity within the government. It's more like it, I wish I was joking. The Federal Reserve, a for-profit corporation, regulates the cash flow of the federal government. Surprise! Corruption in the roots. One thing to remember, the Federal Reserve fulfills its public duty as a separate entity within the government.
Separate entity within the government.
As the so-called realists say, politics do not run money. Money runs politics. That's all the time we have for today, folks. Have a beautiful day. A message from Zion Bro, the so-called realist.
Tomorrow's rally supporting transgender job equality will take place at the Bureau of Labor and Industries offices at 800 Northeast Oregon Street in Portland from 11:30 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. The organizers' focus will be to speak out against transgender employment discrimination and to ask the Bureau of Labor to take a more active role in upholding Oregon's civil rights employment law by hiring multiple self-identifying transgender employees within its organization, to hire transgender equity trainers, and to take steps to require all Oregon employers to do the same. Transgender people often face job environments that lack support systems and resources to support those who identify as or who are perceived to be transgender in the workplace. The lack of specific trainings usually leads to situations where transgender employees endure harassment without many avenues for recourse. KBOO's Zelos Marchand spoke to rally organizer Alyssa Pariah about tomorrow's rally.
I've got Alyssa Pariah, transgender activist, on the line. Thank you, Alyssa, for taking time to join us and our audience on KBOO. Can you tell our audience about the action that's coming up tomorrow?
Yeah, absolutely. So we are hoping that the community can come out and show up for trans people who are some of the most marginalized and vulnerable when it comes to being able to get jobs. And we think that right now, with the horrendous political climate that we're in, with Donald Trump and his ilk openly attacking transgender people, first with the lack of protections or the taking away of protections for students in school to be able to access the bathrooms that they're using, all the way up to his attempt to ban trans people in the military. We think that it is very important for other institutions, whether that be at the state or city level, to wage a fight back, to be able to show transgender citizens that they stand on their side And I think that right now the state of Oregon has a great opportunity to be able to show that, not just to transgender people directly, but to everyone who is looking right now, and specifically looking at Oregon, which has long been a model for progressive politics in many ways. So we think that one of the ways that they can do that is to correct the disparity in terms of who gets hired at the state level with state jobs, and have the people who work for the state actually be represented equally with the citizens of Oregon. So we are calling on them to do the hard work of having their employees actually represent their citizens. So however many people there are in Oregon, whatever the percentage is of the citizens in Oregon that are transgender, we call on them to hire that many people so that it corresponds at the state level. We think that's very important as a way for them to show the private sector the way forward in terms of employment equity and justice.
I also understand part of the action is to encourage BOLI, the Bureau of Labor, to incorporate external training that will support transgender equity, not only within its own walls, but outside into other realms of employment. Can you tell our audience a little bit about what structures they have in place right now?
Yeah, so right now the structures are a good start in that they can provide some resources for employers who want to do the right thing, and they can provide some recourse for transgender employees to be able to seek justice if they feel that they've been discriminated against in any way by their employers. But we think that there needs to be a more proactive approach. So that means that there should be more opportunities and more ease for private employers to be able to find out for themselves how they can best relate to the transgender community, and particularly to transgender employees, whether current or prospective.
So does BOLI have any transgender specialists right now?
No, that's part of what we're calling for. It's one of our demands, is that BOLI takes seriously, one of the ways that they can take seriously, an agenda that is trans-inclusive, a way to show people what it looks like to take seriously trans justice, is to hire someone or some people. We don't expect one person to be able to handle this job by themselves, is to hire people in BOLI specifically for making sure that trans people are prepared for the job market and that they're not being discriminated against, and to be able to provide resources both for employers and employees to be able to have cultural competency and to be able to be more functional and integrated members of society, which right now I think we see that many trans people feel like they just cannot be because of so many elements of social stigma that we think could largely be eradicated if people had access to fair and full employment.
Is this affecting people who are coming to BOLI complaining and filing reports of discrimination? It's against Oregon law to discriminate based on gender, sex, race, religion.
Yeah, that's right. So some of the speakers that we'll have there, that we will be including tomorrow, are people who already have standing BOLI cases. So it will be up to them to sort of disclose what it's looked like for them. Mm-hmm. But one thing that we know is that because of things like shame and stigma and, frankly, depression and exhaustion that a lot of trans people feel just by moving in the world and engaging with people who may not respect them for who they are, including their employers, is that many of them will never actually go through the process of contacting BOLI and making complaints and going through an entire grievance process, and including sort of the state proper in their lives in that way. And that's why we think BOLI should really be taking a more proactive role to sort of take that burden off of the people who are already experiencing such marginalization and oppression, that as an institution, we think that it is important for them to take a more proactive and positive role here.
So the future would look like BOLI being a more being in a more leadership role, working in tandem with the job force out there with resources that will help prepare the way for transgender workers, so that it's not just about hiring somebody transgender, but also about making sure that the structures in place are supportive.
Yeah, it's so important. I mean, we want to sort of applaud and uplift and show as an example employers who are good to their employees, especially their transgender employees. But we know that for the most part, that's just not what we see, right? That's just not the mm-hmm. nature of employment and exploitation and surplus value, right? Like, that's so we know that what is necessary actually is for the state to put checks and balances in place, so that exploitation is not as oppressive as it is now. And I think that in the case of transgender employees, there is a very urgent need for them to step in and do that. And I think this is a great opportunity for Oregon and for BOLI to lead the way. This could be an incredible moment for them to lead the country.
What kind of examples of exploitation are we talking about? For those of our audience who may or may not have transgender community that they intersect with, what is that looking like for transgender workers today?
Yeah, so like in my case, and in so many cases of people who I know and love and am close to, is what can often happen is, even if an employer tolerates or doesn't have any bad feelings about having a trans employee, what can regularly happen is a customer may come in and just, frankly, I'm going to be brutal here, that they are offended by having to talk to someone that they identify as trans, and may blatantly disrespect them. And suddenly the onus to sort of bite one's tongue and accept mistreatment falls on the shoulders of that trans employee. And that is something that I think is unacceptable. And in that case, I think it should be the employer who stands up for their employee and recognizes their value and their worth. And that is not usually how these things go. And of course, this is to say nothing about how coworkers or managers may engage with transgender employees, where the harassment that can take place is something that we are often expected to sort of take on the chin, because, well, we know that we're a marginalized group, and we're supposed to know that, well, frankly, we freak people out, and we should not sort of just expect everyone to accept us and respect us across the board. And to be frank, I don't think that we should have to continue to accept that as a way of life. I think it's barbaric, and I hope that we can change it. And I see this avenue, this action, this campaign as being one of the ways in which we can begin to really turn that tide, because I don't think it's fair that we have to endure that kind of pain on a daily basis for much longer.
Well, thank you so much for your frankness. It's very appreciated. We have a couple minutes left. Do you want to tell our audience where the action is, how they can help, and how they can be involved?
The rally is tomorrow. That's Thursday at 11:30 a.m. It's going until 1:30 p.m. and it's at the Bureau of Labor and Industry. That's at 800 Northeast Oregon Street.
This is Zelo Zelos Marchant for KBOO News.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned for news from the Boo at 5:45, followed by the Underground at 6. At 7 o'clock, it's the debut of Combined Culture, an intersection in music, art, and politics from an African-American perspective. Tomorrow's weather should be partly cloudy with a high around 81 and a low of 58 here in Portland. Today in history, rock and roll musician Elvis Presley passed away at the age of 42 in Memphis, Tennessee. Our quote of the day is from Elvis, who said, "Truth is like the sun. You can shut it out for a time, but it ain't going away."
KBOO sibling station WTJU 91.1 FM at the University of Virginia in Richmond is putting together a community microphone with messages of hope and solidarity for the people of Charlottesville after the recent traumatic events of the August 12th's Unite the Right rally. KBOO Community Radio collected messages this afternoon and would like to share them with you. We stand with Charlottesville.
Yeah, let us know what you need. Tell us what we can do to support you, to lift you up. If you guys need chocolate, we'll send it to you.
We will.
All the chocolate.
All the chocolate.
Because we've been there.
Yes. Thanks.
All right.
My message to our sister station in Virginia is to persevere. Things will be better. It's always darkest before the dawn, as they say in that old saw. And just keep doing what you're doing. Do not be discouraged.
Thank you.
Thank you.
As from one city that has experienced brutal racist violence and murder this year to another, keep up the good work, and we're all watching you in expectation and compassion, and all the best to everyone in Charlottesville.
KBOO in Portland, Oregon is standing with you folks, and we wish you all the best.
Thanks.
Just remember to be kind to each other.
Yeah.
Don't lose hope, and good luck in disarming and subduing violence and hatred.
Cool. Thanks. Yeah.
And now we hear the latest in worker-related news from our friends at laborradio.org.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a Diversified Media Enterprises production. I'm Doug Cunningham.
I say people, you say power, people,
power,
people.
Some of the protesters who toppled the Confederate statue at the Durham, North Carolina courthouse on Monday had witnessed the Nazi KKK violence in Charlottesville. One of the unnamed anti-Nazi, anti-white supremacist protesters had this to say to local TV station WNCN.
People associated with the alt-right are white supremacists. They're Nazis. It's not okay.
This young woman told Durham, North Carolina protesters she witnessed the horror of Charlottesville.
I witnessed bloodshed. I witnessed bodies stacked on top of each other.
After the Confederate statue was toppled, the Durham protesters marched away behind the banner, "No Trump, No KKK, No Fascist USA."
Today we got a small taste of justice.
2,500 University of Chicago graduate employees will vote October 17th and 18th on whether or not to join the union Graduate Students United. The National Labor Relations Board rejected university attempts to block the unionization vote. Claudio Gonzalez is a pro-union grad student in mathematics at the University of Chicago.
At the end of the day, graduate employees, we are
we're an integral part. We're like a backbone of the University of Chicago. Every graduate, every undergraduate is taught at some point by a grad instructor. And every grad researcher, they're constantly advancing scientific frontiers. We're constantly doing the work that makes this university what it is. And for a very long time, graduate employees have just had no voice at all in these decisions that affect their lives, the lives of their students, the broader community. And we collectively want a voice.
Labor issues for University of Chicago grad employees include increases in health insurance costs and the workloads. Gonzalez says university attempts to delay or block the union election is just an attempt to run out the clock, giving Trump time to reverse an Obama labor board ruling that grad students are employees with union rights.
It's very clear to me that this ongoing refusal of democracy, of denying our right to democracy, to choosing whether we would be represented by a union, it's especially insulting because it's so transparently a delaying tactic. It's only there to buy time in hopes that Trump will reverse the 2016 Columbia ruling.
The NLRB says grad teaching and research assistants are employees with union rights because they, quote, perform services for the benefit of the employer under its direction and control for which they are compensated, end quote. Graduate Students United is affiliated with the American Federation of Teachers.
Brought to you by Blue Cross Blue Shield National Labor Office, empowering working Americans with stable health coverage for over 50 years. The National Labor Office is committed to remaining the top choice for the 17 million union workers, retirees, and families they serve. Online at bcbs.com/NLO.
WIN is America's multimedia voice for workers. Support that mission at workersindependentnews.com. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit workersindependentnews.com.
Now let's listen to some reports from our friends at National Native News.
What I saw is actually
All right.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Native American lawmakers in Montana are calling for the removal of a memorial to Confederate soldiers in the state's capital city. Nikki Ouellette of Montana Public Radio reports.
The granite fountain in Helena's Hill Park has been the subject of debate in recent years as other cities across the country decide the fate of monuments erected to honor the legacy of the Confederacy. Representative Shane Morgeau, a Missoula Democrat, was one of eight members of the Native American Legislative Caucus to sign a letter Tuesday addressed to Helena city and state officials asking for the fountain to be removed following weekend violence and a death at a white nationalist rally in Charlottesville, Virginia.
You know, obviously, for us to take a look at, you know, ourselves, take a look at Montana and kind of revisit some of the things that, you know, we have ongoing in our own state.
The letter says such monuments have, quote, stood for segregation, secession, and slavery, end quote, and asks city and state officials to recognize the, quote, harmful message that this fountain sends to Indians, minorities, and all Montanans. Governor Steve Bullock says the statue is a city issue, not a state one.
Whether it's ripped out and put in a museum or left with a sign clearly explaining how and why that fountain was erected a century ago, what's important is that in 2017, it's clear that we as Montanans do not glorify some of the darkest chapters of our past or tolerate the hate and racism that a small fringe of our society continues to spew.
City officials have said previously they did not plan to remove the memorial, which was donated to the city in 1916 by the United Daughters of the Confederacy, a Virginia-based group of women descended from Confederate soldiers who are dedicated to preserving Confederate history. City officials decided instead in 2015 to add an interpretive sign to contextualize the monument's history, but that sign has not yet been installed. The fountain is the only Confederate monument in the Northwest United States. For National Native News, I'm Nikki Ouellette.
The families of missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls are demanding a reset of Canada's commission, which is leading a national investigation. Dan Karpinchuk reports.
Ottawa has resisted efforts so far to retool the inquiry, despite repeated calls from the families and the resignations of one of the commissioners as well as key staff members. Recently, the largest Native group in Canada, the Assembly of First Nations, rejected a call for the Prime Minister to replace the lead commissioner, but did urge some kind of a hard reset. Now the families of the victims say they want that hard reset. In an open letter to Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, more than 140 of them say they want the resignations of the commissioners, but they also want their concerns about the inquiry's process addressed. Josie Nipanak of the Awatan Healing Lodge in Alberta is one of those who signed the letter.
What we're seeing at this moment is a very colonial construct that is very legal. And those are some of the systems that had previously or continue in some ways to dismiss Indigenous women's lives and to perpetuate colonial violence against Indigenous women. So those systems are very difficult to trust as well.
Nipinak says the process cannot be done without the families of missing and murdered loved ones and without the native cultures and ceremonies across the country. A spokesman for the Minister of Indigenous Affairs says Ottawa is committed to ending the tragedy of missing and murdered Indigenous women, and families must be at the center of the Commission's work. The commissioners say they have a plan and are dedicated to finding the solutions needed. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Support by the Albuquerque Hispano Chamber of Commerce's Convention and Tourism Department, providing complete convention and visitor planning services to Native American conventions in Albuquerque. Information on convention and tourism services at siabq.org. Support by BNSF Railway, proud partners of the American Indian Science and Education Society's National Conference, September 21st to 23rd, helping prepare the next generation of STEM leaders. More at bnsf.com/tribal relations.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Now we'll hear the latest in environmental news from the Green News Report.
What I saw is actually extremely very terrible and unimaginable.
Hundreds dead in Sierra Leone after massive mudslide caused by torrential rains.
You know, it's 8,000 square miles of no oxygen. That can't be good.
This year's Gulf of Mexico dead zone is the largest ever recorded. Scientists warn super heat waves will get more frequent. Plus, it's not your imagination, Florida. Sea levels really are rising faster in the southeast.
How can that be? We'll find out all of that and more straight ahead. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Republicans used to be against lead in the drinking water. Now they're happy to poison their children if it'll make Al Gore sad.
Well, he is the root of all evil. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, absolutely horrifying, disastrous news out of Sierra Leone today.
Yes, it's the latest in a string of extremely deadly extreme weather disasters. In the African nation of Sierra Leone, in the town of Freetown, officials say at least 300 people were killed in the pre-dawn hours on Monday morning as a massive mudslide caused by days of torrential rains and flash floods buried residents in their homes while they slept. Officials say the death toll may get even higher. Rescue operations are underway.
Is it too early to tell if there is a climate change fingerprint here?
Yes, it is too early for an attribution study, but these extreme torrential downpours are consistent with what scientists have predicted will happen with global warming. In Iraq, the Iraqi government has declared a mandatory holiday due to an extensive and severe heat wave. Civil servants were ordered to remain home because temperatures in the cities of Baghdad and Basra have soared to more than 124 degrees Fahrenheit for more than 10 days straight.
Is the finger of climate change on that?
Well, again, it is too soon to say, but it is consistent with what scientists predicted.
Feels like we're starting to see a pattern here.
And now yet another new study projects that such extreme heat waves will get even worse. The Joint Research Center, which is the science and research laboratory of the European Union, in a study released last week, calculated that if humanity does not cut carbon emissions on our current trajectory, we can expect what they called super heat waves to hit regularly in many parts of the world, including Europe and the United States. They say we can expect extended stretches of temperatures above 131 degrees.
Man, those super heat waves,
not so super.
Meanwhile, the fossil fuel industry, whose emissions cause the global warming that intensifies extreme weather events like heat waves and floods, are being subsidized by governments to the tune of more than $5 trillion a year. In a new study, economic researchers at the International Monetary Fund combined two numbers to reach that $5 trillion: direct subsidies to consumers that keep fossil fuel prices low, and producer subsidies. That's direct and indirect payments and tax breaks given to the fossil fuel industry, and also the environmental costs of pollution and health impacts that the fossil fuel industry doesn't pay for, but governments do. The report calculates that government subsidies globally for the fossil fuel industry amount to more than 6% of global GDP.
But we're told that renewable energy can't survive without government subsidies.
Exactly. In the United States, in the Gulf of Mexico, this year's dead zone is the largest ever recorded, according to NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. Dead zones are areas with no oxygen that kill whatever can't swim away fast enough, and that harms Louisiana's commercial shrimping industry. They're caused when nutrient pollution, largely from agricultural runoff like manure and fertilizer, washes into bodies of water. That creates algae blooms that use up all the oxygen. And farming is the primary culprit, according to former NOAA scientist Dan Scavia in an interview with NPR.
Most of the nitrogen and phosphorus that drives this problem comes from the upper Midwest. It's coming from agriculture. You know, it's 8,000 square miles of no oxygen. That can't be good.
Finally, sea levels are rising faster in Florida and other southeastern coastal states than in other parts of the world. Sea levels rise unevenly around the planet, and researchers with the University of Florida have now confirmed that between 2011 and 2015, the sea level in Cape Hatteras, North Carolina, and points farther south rose 6 times faster than the long-term global average.
So sea levels rise at different rates, even though it's the same sea?
Yes, exactly, due to different underwater geology, for example. Also, warming oceans expand.
And it's hitting North Carolina and points south down to Florida.
Yeah.
Climate change denial country.
Yes, kind of. And it's not going to get any better. Flood systems that are designed for the last 50 years are not ready for the next 50 years.
We're not ready for a lot of this over the next 50 years, I'm afraid. Thank you. For much more on all of these reports and the ones we couldn't get to, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. We've got a lot of extra stories that we just don't have time for in our 6 minutes. Don't forget, you can download our reports anytime via Stitcher, TuneIn, or iTunes. Find us, follow us, and share us worldwide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
It's a rising, rising time. It's a rising, rising tide. Oh, just like the rising tide is calling.
Now, here's our daily installment of Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. The luscious red tomatoes and juicy peaches in your local grocery store were most likely picked by hand to prevent bruising. But that personal touch comes at a price. On hot days, the workers who pick these crops are at risk of heat stroke, heat exhaustion, and other heat-related illnesses. Linda McCauley, a professor and dean of the Emory University School of Nursing, says heat-related illness can sneak up on someone who is unaware of the signs. So it's important to recognize the early symptoms in order to prevent serious complications or even death.
So you're working in a field and you've started having a headache, and then all of a sudden you're starting to feel dizzy and you feel like you're going to pass out.
Once someone feels lightheaded, quick action is critical.
In general, the workers don't have any sense about how dangerous a heat stroke is, and that you have minutes, you don't have hours.
Heat stroke can be deadly, but it's also avoidable. So educating workers and employers about how to recognize the symptoms is vital. And putting programs in place to protect workers will become even more important as the climate warms. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. Learn more at yaleclimateconnections.org.
U.S. officials estimated that the country suffered over $260 billion in flood-related damages between 1980 and 2013, and an executive order signed by President Obama aimed at helping that by requiring that builders factor in scientific projections for severe storms and increased flooding. But it's reported that President Donald Trump just signed a new executive order effectively revoking that law. Trump has been a large proponent of deregulation and feels the order will remove flood risk restrictions for federally funded infrastructure projects. This would allow developers to cut through red tape and provide more freedom to build on floodplains meant to hold water during downpours and high currents. The order is a step to support Trump's $1 trillion infrastructure plan, which received criticism for favoring private developers. Trump stated, quote, "It's going to be quick, and by the way, if it doesn't meet environmental standards, we're going to approve it. Very simple." Officials like Rafael Lemaitre, former director at FEMA, feels that it will make buildings in flood-prone areas much more vulnerable and stated that Trump was undoing the most significant action taken in a generation to safeguard U.S. infrastructure. He states that our country has a choice to make, build smarter now or force taxpayers to pay for it later when floods occur.
Today, the people of Sierra Leone have started burying hundreds of victims from the mudslide that wiped out the homes on the edge of the country's capital, Freetown. It's been reported that over 300 are confirmed dead and at least 600 people are still missing since the disaster. Aid workers claim there is a high threat of disease due to dead bodies lying out in the heat. With one of Africa's worst flood-induced disasters in recent memory, Sierra Leone's government is pleading for international help.
A boat sent by a Spanish migrant aid group was targeted by the Libyan Coast Guard in the Mediterranean Sea. The aid group, called Proactivi Open Arms, was in international waters when the Coast Guard instructed them to head to a Libyan port or come under fire. Libyan officials have not confirmed this incident. As the European Union tightens migration restrictions, it is estimated that 97,000 migrants have made it to Italy by crossing the Mediterranean Sea.
Back in 2015, Iran reached an agreement with world powers that would curb Tehran's nuclear programs. But now Iranian President Hassan Rouhani stated this week that Iran could abandon that agreement, quote, within hours if the United States imposes any new sanctions against them. Yahoo News is reporting that Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov has reached out to Iran, expressing his hopes that they will not quit the agreement. But he also expresses his hopes that the U.S. will not violate its own obligations in that agreement by imposing new sanctions. Lavrov was quoted saying, "I think unilateral sanctions are irresponsible actions that can hurt and undermine the balance achieved."
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Fox Wild, Kunsel Dolma, and Sam Bowman. Our producer is Kyle Qureshi. Our engineer is David Kesters. The KBOO Evening News and Public Affairs Director is Zelis Ellis Marchant. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. And you can find us on Facebook and on Twitter at KBOO News. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR in Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Brian Pritchett.
And I'm Erin J. Bernard. Coming up tomorrow morning on KBOO. At 7, it's Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8, it's Voices from the Edge with poet and activist John Slaughter from Poetic Justice. At 9, it's Press Watch. Teresa Mitchell brings you the news you're not supposed to know. At 9:30, Fight the Empire returns with the historic tale of the San Patricio Battalion, the Irish soldiers who switched sides in the U.S.'s war against Mexico. At 10, Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15, Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. At 11 on Between the Covers, David Naiman speaks to author Yanara Friedlin about her book, Uncountry, A Mythology, A Poetic Reimagining of Myth. KBOO keeps you informed and involved, and we need your help. Go to kboo.fm and click on Donate to become a member.
And now it's time for News from the Boo, the weekly segment from people inside of and around KBOO with news from your community radio station.
What's happening, y'all? This is Mike Crenshaw, and you are listening to News from the Boo. And I'm in the studio. I'm in P3 today at KBOO.FM, KBOO Community Radio. And I have a very special guest with me is Johnny Cool Stargazer. Johnny Cool, how you doing, bro?
Hey, what's good? I'm doing good, man.
Good,
thanks,
man,
for having me.
Yeah, man. I just wanted you to come down and maybe spend a little time telling me and the listeners about what you're up to with music right now, with and how what you do with music might relate to KBOO Community Radio.
Oh man, right now I just completed a full project called Native Alien, and I'm in the process of releasing singles at a time just to see how they do. But in the meantime, I spend a lot of time here at KBOO, especially in where we are right here in P3, and just, you know, catching up on editing. I offer some help for those who don't know much about Adobe Audition. I can lend a hand. There's a lot of different podcasts going on here, so I'm a little bit savvy with the program here. Plus, yeah, it's just like cool to meet folks, you know, like record different rough drafts and references to new music ideas. It's real, how do you say, not just accessible, but it's helps really beneficial.
So yeah, this is a new production studio here at KBOO called P3, stands for Production 3, and we got some new equipment in here, and Adobe Audition is one of the programs, the software programs that people use to create radio down here at KBOO. People create news interviews and edit them, kind of like what we're doing now. We're doing this News from the Boo segment in Adobe Audition, but people also, a lot of people that come through here are producers of music. Singers, songwriters, beat makers such as yourself. So how long, Johnny, have you been making music?
Well, this is my 11th year.
Yeah,
11th year in